This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It means one thing, college football.
But don't forget, man, we're going to get them on the run. We're going to go.
It's time for Saturday Football in the South.
Who's walking up for the devil?
Not for these guys.
Chris Goforth, John Chuckery, and Randy McMichael.
Take you around the SEC, ACC, and all over the college football landscape.
Oh, look at the sugar falling out of the sky.
Are you ready? For some real college football talk?
I've been ready for this my whole life.
Then let's kick this off. It's college football game time on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
College football game time is brought to you by Dos Equis and Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Chris Goforth alongside Randy McMichael, John Chuckery. Glad to have you with us wherever you may be joining us from today at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game or maybe on the radio.com app. Glad to have you along. You can find us at 929 The Game on Twitter. You can find Randy McMichael at RandyMac81, John Chuckery at JMCH316, and you can find me at ChrisGoForth1. Guys, let's get it going here. It's been a tough week in college football. By my count here, I think the number is currently sitting at 15 games, I believe, that were canceled this week due to COVID, including three games involving teams in the top five. Georgia's game at Missouri has been canceled this week. Georgia Tech's home game against Pitt has also been, well, let me rephrase that, postponed.
Yeah,
maybe the best way to word that. There's a big difference between postponed and canceled. The Air Force Wyoming game has been canceled, but right now Georgia and Missouri and most of these games have just been postponed. It sounds like instead of the conference championships kind of having their own day there in December, sounds like now, guys, we're going to get some regular season college football games that will be played on that day as well.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say we're not shocked by this. There's a lot of games that are being postponed and canceled because of COVID, but I mean, this is something that we kind of figured that would happen. I just don't think we thought that this many games in one week would be canceled or postponed. And I think the NCAA has a problem on their hands, especially if this goes into next week, Chris, because of the fact is that you don't know, different conferences have different protocols as far as how long you got to quarantine and be out and those things. And so, you know, it's one of those situations where do they move things back? And I think if they have another, because we know the NCAA, they're the most reactionary people in the world outside the NFL. You know, they wait for something bad to happen, then they adjust to it off of that. So I'm anxious to see how they, you know, approach this if it continues into next week's action of football.
Well, I'm just glad we're not postponed. We're one of the few things that are still
that's true
going at it. Is it becoming obvious that there needs to be some changes in the protocols? It's not that there's these, not everybody's having mass COVID outbreaks. You
right.
get one player that tests positive and 14 guys have to shut down around him. And it's, you know, I understand that there are some places that have had multiples of players, but frankly, the reality is if they're going to try to squeeze all of this in, and I don't, you know, the SEC, you know, you heard Chris, obviously, because you just referenced it about the fact that SEC Championship Saturday is now going to be makeup Saturday. Explain to me exactly how LSU is going to make up their games when they're supposed to play Alabama and Florida.
Exactly.
Are they going to play like a trio of games or something that day, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, they're not going to. I think, and that's the reason why I don't think anything has been decided yet. I think what the conference is trying to do is to wait to see
what games impact the that conference championship.
I mean, that's what they're going to weigh on. Florida and Alabama have to lose twice. Those two teams would have to lose twice for either one of them to not be in the SEC championship game at this point. Florida basically has a two-game lead because they would have to lose, and then they have the tiebreaker over Georgia. Right. Same thing with A&M and Alabama. Alabama would have to lose twice to lose the tiebreaker. So unless that one of those teams stubs their toe and has to play, I don't see why you have to worry about either of those teams making up their game.
If you root for chaos, though, that's what you root for.
But yeah. I'm with you right there, JC. Is like, because when you're talking about this LSU, are they going to flip a coin? Like, okay, LSU plays Florida, LSU plays Alabama, heads or tails. But and the thing what you were talking about, JC, you just saw what happened at Stanford. You got the news yesterday about Stanford. The Pac-12 hasn't apologized to them because of the false positive. And it's crazy because, like you said, the one player, then the contract, Tracy. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean – why the hell did Clemson play? They didn't have, you know, that's the crazy thing about it. It's the different conferences, is different protocols. Well, the Clemson's quarterback got it, but they still were able to play.
Right, and UCLA had four kids that tested positive, and they played last week.
Exactly.
Whereas Cal had one player test, and because of the contact tracing, everything had to shut down. So that's why I say I don't really know and understand what the protocols and where the consistency is. And I mean, that's the thing that they're going to have to change. If they want to get this in, if they realistically want to get it. My thing is, honestly, guys, if I'm the playoff committee, I talked about this on my show last night. I ain't changing anything. November 24th is the first day the polls come out. The announcements are made on the 20th. Your record is what your record is at that point. I can't keep delaying the playoffs or New Year's Six or this or that, because you're seeing that there's no way at the rate we're going that they're going to finish. So just the records are what they are come December 20th, and we'll pick the four best teams. And if that means we have to use the eye test, I'd almost rather they do that than their convoluted things that they try to spin as to how they pick teams anyway.
It's College Football Game Time here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Cal and UCLA. One more quick note on this, guys, and then we'll take a look back at last week. But Cal and UCLA, they're going to play each other tomorrow afternoon in the Rose Bowl. It's a noon kickoff on FS1. Of course, Cal was supposed to play at Arizona State this week, and Herm tested positive.
Man, I saw
that. Coach Edwards is Coach Herm is it does okay, but and then UCLA
Sam Pittman too, by the way, you know, because Sam Pittman's not going to be at his game today.
He's not going to be on the sidelines today.
So Arkansas. So here again, explain to me, how did Nick Saban test positive and coach 3 days later?
And
I hate to say it this way, Randy, but if you're the right name and the right team, they're going to find a way for you to get it done.
But we already know this.
Right. I understand. And that's why I say.
But I think the only thing that – I won't say contradict, but the only thing that you have is that the best player or the most recognized player in college ball got it and he didn't play. But he's a player. That's where we are when we talk about this COVID. Is that it's too many – rules for different things instead of one set rule.
It's why I think
Chris,
I think the playoff would be smart to just stay on track and not change anything. And Bill Hancock, Bob Bowlesby's running his mouth on Thursday, then backtracking Friday, and he don't know what he's doing. And Bill Hancock was like, look, there's no reason for us to change now. Stay the course. The 24th is when the first poll comes out. The 20th is when we make all the decisions. Unless there's something massive that happens, stay the course and just stay on track with what it is.
I find it hard to believe that if Arkansas could get him to test, talking about Sam Pittman, that if they could get him to test negative three times this week, because that's what has to happen. You got to have three negative tests. I am assuming, just like Nick Saban, that Sam Pittman was tested every single day this week. After that, to try to get the three negative tests so he could get back. I'm all about a good conspiracy theory, but I don't know that I buy that somehow, you know, Sam Pittman's sitting out because he's Sam Pittman and Nick Saban didn't sit out because he's Nick Saban. From what I gather, from what I have seen, sounds like Sam Pittman is, he's sick. He actually has symptoms that have wiped him out. But Saban never had that.
But Chris, there is something to the effect of, it looks like Nick Saban had three tests in about 45 minutes and on Saturday afternoon.
I'm with you.
For the people that are sick, I get that. But at the same time, you test positive on like Wednesday, and like, you know, every 15 minutes you're running to the bathroom getting a test until, you know, it's like taking your driver's test or something. I mean, just keep trying this thing over and over again, and eventually we'll get the results that we want, you know, out of it. Maybe I'm in the wrong on it, but I get that Sam Pittman's sick and he's, you know, he was doing virtual stuff all week and stuff like that anyway, but it's just, I don't know. It's very strange how things work themselves out sometimes. But
we'll talk more about Arkansas. They are in action today in Gainesville to take on sixth-ranked Florida. That's a 7 o'clock kick on ESPN. We'll get to that coming up in our next segment when we go around the SEC, brought to you by ESOG. Let's take a look back at last week real quick. Couple of big games last week, including what I think is the game of the year with Notre Dame and Clemson. We'll get to that in a minute. But Florida beat Georgia last year. Started off well for the Dogs, Randy. They go up 14-0, and then all of a sudden Florida took off. And once this game turned into a shootout, it was just over for Georgia.
Yeah, it was. And the thing that, you know, me and Andy, we had our guy Roddy on, Riding the Balls on earlier this week. And the one thing he, you know, they calculated is that we left over 280 yards of offense on the field. And that was, and that included some touchdowns. But I'm not going to take any credit away from the Gators. They beat us. And even though we had a chance to cut it to a one-score game with a pick six, but, you know, that's why DBs play BB, not receiver. But this was a case of they used Georgia weaknesses against them. We still, guys, ain't covered the wheel route. It's been a week, and they still run the wheel routes all over the place right now, and they're making plays. And the thing with it is Kyle Trask, they let him get comfortable. And when he got comfortable, he just lit our ass up, and that's what happened. And now you see, you know, we talk about the quarterback position at Georgia. That offense, I love that what Todd Monken was thinking. We just didn't have the guys to run what he was thinking. And I think that was the ultimate downfall for Georgia last Saturday.
Well, I'll give it to you real simply. The guy who's been the starting quarterback for Georgia the last 3 weeks is 32 of 69, which is 46.4% completion, averaging 159 yards a game, has 3 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Mm-hmm. And to put that in perspective, Chris, that means he has 2 more touchdown passes than he has registered tackles in the last 3 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and you know, we talked about DeJuan Mathis. He's completing 40% of his passes, Randy, averaging 3 yards an attempt. He has 89 yards on 30 attempts. You can't – and I thought ESPN – we talked about this ESPN Plus article I was reading today. You're not going to win with game managers in college football at the level that you need to anymore.
Nope.
I mean, say what you will, but you cannot game manage your way – with offenses in college football and think you're going to win big time.
You're absolutely correct, JC, and I'm glad you said that because Georgia needs a draftable quarterback playing for them because you always say this, you always talk, Georgia wants to be in the winning business. You're not in the winning business with a game manager like Stetson Bennett. Bless his heart, he played his heart out. He did everything that he could do in his ability. But you're not going to win in college football. Good defense is okay, and your defense ain't been good the last few weeks either. But defense is cool. But you got to have offensive firepower, mainly from the quarterback position, to win national championships in college football today, period.
But Randy, if your quarterback gives up 6 interceptions in 3, you're putting your defense in a bad spot. I don't care if you got the 85 Bears. I mean, if teams don't have a long field that they have to drive on you. And, Chris, what did we talk about, you know, early in the season? And we're going to talk about it more in Max of the Week. Miami has a guy who can win them football games now.
Yeah.
Quarterback. They have a guy who legitimately can go out there, and he did that last, you know, week. We were on Saturday. They had played that Friday night. They have a quarterback, Randy, who can win games for them.
Amazing.
You better have that kind of guy now if you want to be in the discussion of, well, how do I beat Bama or Clemson? Or because Joe Burrow threw 60 touchdowns. That's why you win. You know, Matt Ryan throws 50, you know, 40 touchdowns in his NBA. That's why you win. That's when you have one of those guys that has one of those years, you win a lot. And you can't game manage your way through college football to be a really good team now. Look at BYU and Cincinnati. They have terrific quarterbacks. They play great defense. They have, you know, there's a lot of talk now that kid at Cincinnati, Randy, may be a mid-round NFL draft pick how good he's playing.
He is making a case for himself and that Cincinnati, and guys, it took me a week to come around to it. I wouldn't mind seeing Cincinnati in that Final Four. I really would. Now, they're going to get they head beat in by Bama, but I wouldn't mind seeing that because of their quarterback play. They are a good football team. No, they're a damn good football team.
Cincinnati still unbeaten as they ran all over East Carolina last night. Notre Dame Clemson, we'll try to touch on that one. In Indiana, beating Michigan for the first time since 1987. We'll try to take a look back at that one as well. We'll talk more Georgia football coming up 9:40. Brandon Adams from Dog Nation joins us. We'll go around the SEC next, brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Four games canceled this week, three games on tap today in the SEC. We'll do that next. College Football Game Time, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. Just doesn't look good. It doesn't look like Derek Mason's getting any sort of buy-in. They got guys opting out in the middle of the year. It's just not pretty right now at Vanderbilt, and Kentucky should have their way today.
Yeah, Kentucky should win this game big. And, you know, it was when I saw the news about their offensive line, I just, you know, because when I was at Georgia, we lost Coach Watson the day, like later on that afternoon after we played LSU, and he passed away, had a heart attack. And I remember how our offensive line came out, and so I know how these young men are feeling, and you know, and you send prayers to him and his family and the whole Kentucky, you know, football team. But yeah, they're gonna mash. Vanderbilt is a lost cause. You remember? I mean, they really are right now, and I like Coach Mason a lot, but this will be his last year as the head coach, and they just don't have any talent. They're not good offensively, and then you know, guys, you know, it was one thing they weren't never really good on offense. They had Jacob, but they always can hang their hat on a tough defense, and they don't even have that anymore. I expect Joy Gatewood, he's getting a little bit more comfortable, so I expect him maybe to take some shots down the field because they're just going to beat Vanderbilt all up and down the field today.
Couldn't they find a way to cancel this game?
I mean, this is just going to be a massacre.
Yeah. Arkansas and Florida. Now, this of the three games that are on the slate in the conference today, this is probably the best. It's 7 o'clock on ESPN tonight, number 6 Florida at home in Gainesville. Welcoming in Arkansas, no Sam Pittman on the sideline for Arkansas. Barry Odom will handle the head coaching duties today. Florida team right now, John Chuckery, they control their own destiny after beating Georgia last week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're in the driver's seat now to play Alabama, as we said. Both of those teams would have to lose twice now at this point. And, boy, I'll tell you what, there's one game that Florida's played, obviously, one less game than Alabama. But, and I'm telling you, Randy, I'm just going to throw it out there, Kyle Trask is making himself into a potential first-round pick. He is, you know, he just had his way. Boy, he is something. And I tell you, the razor thin line, Chris, between where Mac Jones and Kyle Trask is as far as the two best, you know, who's the best quarterback in the SEC, it's a real razor thin line because those two guys are lighting it up right now. And I'm all for Georgia being the SEC championship game, but give me Florida, Alabama, and those two offenses going at it in Mercedes-Benz. I want to see that matchup. I want to see those two offenses get at it because it's not even close that's the two best offenses, you know, and maybe two of the five best in the country. Let me see those two offenses get at it on Saturday the 19th or 12th or whatever it is.
JC, I think Alabama's going to whip Florida's ass. Wow. Because the plays that we left out, Mac Jones ain't going to lead those plays. I think, of course, Florida's going to score because it's college football. I think Alabama beat Florida by three touchdowns. I do. But back to Kyle Trask. Kyle Trask has been simply amazing. He is a guy, like you said this last week, JC, he is moving up on those draft boards. And we've seen, I think if anybody is a pitcher of a guy who has, like, worked himself into a first-rounder and ultimately the first overall pick, it's Joe Burrow. I mean, it's amazing how when you can throw for those many yards and have that much success that you're able to move your way up. I'm happy for Kyle Trask because of the fact is that it's his team. If this game was in Arkansas, I might have like, that might be one of those upset alert type games. If it was in Arkansas because of the emotion of coming off and smacking Georgia the way Florida did last week. But because it's in Gainesville, I think the Gators will win this game. But, I mean, I think Arkansas and, you know, Felipe Franks has been playing well. Okay, I gave him his credit. He's been playing well, too. But I think that, you know, Florida's riding this momentum. Florida's going to thrash Arkansas today, probably.
Kyle Trask, by the way, he's thrown at least four touchdown passes in his first five games, each of his first five games this season. He's the difference in Florida this year compared to Florida the last couple of years, just the way he's been able. But that's what Dan Mullen does, is develop quarterbacks. South Carolina and Ole Miss, that's a 7:30 kickoff tonight. And guys, what happened at South Carolina? You know, you go back to the start of the season, it looks like they were at least running the ball well. Now they're not even doing that. I mean, that's kind of gone. There's questions. I think the Charleston newspaper, I think it's the Post and Courier at over in Charleston, South Carolina, that covers the Gamecocks, they had a piece where they talked to a couple of boosters this week around that South Carolina program, and it sounds like boosters are kind of getting a little tired of what Will Muschamp is putting out there on Saturday, and there's also some talk that maybe Ray Tanner, their athletic director, he could be in some trouble as well if they try to make a change at the end of this year. On the flip side of that, Ole Miss looks like a team that's really starting to get it as this season goes on, Randy. Matt Corral's playing really well. Elijah Moore's putting up huge, huge numbers. And for as bad as Ole Miss has been defensively, I don't think South Carolina has enough firepower to be able to keep up in this game.
Oh, they don't have enough firepower to keep up with this game. I know they came out this week and said that there would be no quarterback change. So, I mean, like you said, Chris, they were able to run the ball. They can't even do that. And, you know, when you look at where South Carolina is right now, they're in a situation where maybe it's time for a new voice. And as much as I love me some Will Muschamp and Mike Bobo, they're just not getting the job done. And it goes back to the whole – and we've talked about this quite a few times, the buyout type thing, the firing and having to pay. I don't think the South Carolina Athletic – like you said, their athletic director he's on the hot seat also. He was a great baseball coach, so they love him up there. But at the same time, they're not getting it done with the expectations – that they thought South Carolina might be better this year, but obviously they have not been. So, I mean, I expect, you know, Lane and Ole Miss to put up at least 45 today.
These two teams combined to give up 74 points a game defensively. This is two of the worst defenses. Now, Chris, I'll ask you, you want me to give you my comment? Because I actually have a thought about the South Carolina job and a coach. Do you want me to give you now, or you want me to wait? You want it now?
Can we have it, please?
No, go ahead. Okay. I can tell you, let me say this. You better have that guy at Liberty better be on your short list of names if you're South Carolina.
I know he's from the area that he's coaching, but he obviously was down here in the South. Why would South Carolina not go get Tom Allen? And go back up the Brinks truck and go bring him down here.
He's done a good job.
Well, I mean,
that's a good one.
That's a great one. And the thing with it is, you said back up the Brinks truck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sounds good. Now, if you're Texas, you back up Brinks truck. Is South Carolina football going to back up a Brinks truck?
Yeah,
Brinks truck for Coach Allen.
You think that they don't want to be in the football business watching what goes on over there in Clemson, South Carolina?
Yeah, but I mean. I don't like that comparison, JC, because Clemson's football program is light years ahead.
But I understand that. But you think South Carolina is satisfied with it's not just their standing in the state. It's not just that's a bad program right now. And look, they've shown. I understand what Clemson did. It hasn't been 50 years ago when there was a guy that coached South Carolina that brought all the best talent into that state, and they were beating Clemson. You know, there was a time when Alshon Jeffery and all those guys.
Look at NFL rosters with South Carolina first round draft picks on it.
That's a lot of them. From the Spurrier era.
Yeah.
From the Spurrier era, yes. And to piggyback off what you just said, John, here's a stat that I found this week. South Carolina has lost 17 games the last 3 years. 12 of those 17 have been by 14 points or more. So not only are they losing games, they're getting blown out in the process. So that is a look at what's going on in the SEC
this week.
There's three games. That's it. There you go. That's all we got. We're going to visit with Brandon Adams from Dog Nation Daily, so we will talk a little bit more Georgia football and a little bit more about the SEC when we get to Brandon coming up here in about 10, 12 minutes from right now. Real quick, though, guys, let's go back to last week again. We didn't get a chance to talk about the Notre Dame-Clemson game. two overtimes. Notre Dame gets the win, 47-40. And look, I've said all year, I didn't think that you guys talked earlier about explosive offenses. I didn't think Notre Dame was explosive enough that they had enough big plays to be able to beat elite teams. And we saw some explosiveness, especially from their wide receivers, Randy. We saw a bunch of guys for Notre Dame go out and make plays, and give Ian Book credit, because you talk about a kid that showed poise, especially on that final drive. Man, he was phenomenal.
Is this the biggest win with Notre Dame since when? Lou Holtz was there?
Yeah, this is as big as it's been.
Since they beat Miami or Florida State?
Yeah. You know, that game was the highest rated game for Notre Dame since the Bush push.
Damn. I mean, it was an awesome football game. It was, and I give Notre Dame all the credit, because I didn't think they would win that football game, even with Trevor Lawrence out. But I want to talk about their defense, because they shut Travis Etienne down. I mean, their whole focus was to put it on the freshman quarterback, and hell, he played a heck of a game. But I just thought the defense and how they shut down Travis Etienne was the biggest outcome of that game. That's what I took away from it.
Yeah, shut down Travis Etienne. Four words I never thought I would hear on this show. To your point, Randy, since 1997, Notre Dame under Bob Davey, Tyrone Willingham, Charlie Weiss, and Brian Kelly are now 2-18 against top five teams. So that's the post-Lou Holtz era. Bob Davey, in his first game at Notre Dame, won against a top five team, and then after that, they had gone 0-for until the victory over Clemson last Saturday. So that shows you it's been a while. It has been a while. One other game from last week that we didn't get a chance to talk about, that's Indiana and Michigan. And guys, at one time I thought Don Brown was considered to be a big-time assistant. It felt like Harbaugh was kind of letting him run things on that defense at Michigan, but Michigan defensively, they are bad. If Harbaugh's back next year, and I know Don Brown's his buddy, but I don't see how he can bring Don Brown back to be his defensive coordinator last year based off what they're putting on the field right now,
Randy,
on defense.
Randy, is this the chickens coming home to roost where
– It sounds like it. Seems like it.
But also where you talk about, as good as Michigan's program is, you lose three first-round NFL guys, it seems like, every year off your defense, and eventually – it's hard to just keep filling that cupboard up with those guys. I mean, think about how many you said about, you know, first round South Carolina. How many first round Michigan players are there over the last 5 years in the NFL? Whether they're good or bad is beyond. But I'm just saying, how many draft picks did they have over the last few years? That, you know, I think that sometimes just getting
can't
enough
lose
personnel,
the players.
Right. Yeah. Just getting enough personnel to stay elite like that, it's tough. I mean, That's why, you know, guys like Nick Saban and Dabo deserve so much credit, because, man, the competition to bring those kids in is fierce, and yet they find a way to get it every year.
Yeah, and they might get throttled today by Wisconsin. I mean, they are just I never would have thought I would look at and see Michigan the way they are right now. They are not a good football team. Hats off to Indiana. I mean, that was the biggest game in Indiana football history, it seemed like, as people were talking about it. And they showed up and they showed out.
You know what's funny is Indiana had a really good year last year and lost a couple of those games real close. And, Randy, what do we say about, like, North Carolina?
Learn how to win.
Indiana learned how to win those games this year compared to losing them last year.
We'll talk some Georgia football next. Brandon Adams from Dog Nation is with us here on College Football Game Time on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app.
Yeah!
College Football Game Time on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. Brought to you in part by Dos Equis. Make social distancing more interesting with Dos Equis, a most interesting beer. Joining us on the WaitFor.com hotline is Brandon Adams of Dog Nation Daily. You can find him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. Brandon, kind enough to give us a little bit of time here on this Saturday morning after spending about 30 minutes with me this week on the College Football Game Time podcast. So, Brandon, always great to visit.
What up, B.A.? What's up, Randy? And Chris, good to you too. Hello to you too.
Hey, given the current state of things in the SEC, Brandon, four games being canceled today, can you bring us up to date on kind of what the health is of this Georgia football team right now?
Well, I think some of the injury situations that were apparent during the Florida game are going to linger beyond just this unscheduled off game on Saturday. For instance, the pivotal defensive names, guys like Richard LeCount and Jordan Davis, we still don't know very much about when they're going to play again. I guess it does look like it's pretty good news for George Pickens on the wide receiver side. That's a guy who had missed the last two games for Georgia because of what I guess was a chest injury. It sounds like he's ready to go again once Georgia resumes. So, you know, Georgia likely a little healthier by the time it plays again, which we hope is next Saturday. But a couple of those big defensive guys like LeCount and Davis, jury still very much remains to be out on them.
B.A., if the game wasn't canceled, who do you think would have been the starting quarterback today at Missouri?
I guess it would have been JT Daniels. Obviously, that's what most fans hope it would have been. You know, we don't exactly know how much work Dwan Mathis got this week, but it certainly seems like on the basis of all the internet chatter and everything else, that Daniels was getting a lot more work than he had gotten at any point in time up until now. So that's one of the things I think for fans, which makes the cancellation or the postponement against Missouri more frustrating, is this probably would have been, whether it was for the full game or part of the game, a chance for Georgia fans to see JT Daniels, and now they'll have to wait a little longer on that. But one way or another, it sounds like Daniels was going to make his debut in Columbia today had they played.
Brandon, when we look at this Georgia defense, you know, obviously against everybody not named Florida and Alabama, they've played really well, but when they face the two top offenses, it's not worked out very well. How much do you think is maybe Georgia isn't as elite a defense as what we think versus when your quarterback has also thrown four interceptions in those two games and put them in some bad spots, that hasn't helped either? Kind of how do you balance those two things out?
Well, I definitely think that Florida benefited from some extra possessions on Saturday, but this wasn't the first time that Georgia's kind of found itself in the spot, whether it be the Alabama game earlier in the year, which I guess there were also some extra possessions there, but the LSU game, you know, going back to last December. And I guess here's where I kind of am on this, that we've measured the Georgia defense based on how many yards and points it allows against a normal opponent. And I don't know that's a particularly good predictor for success anymore against the very best teams. And unfortunately for Georgia fans, last week Florida kind of put itself in that category of, you know, best teams in the country with the way that it performed against Georgia. I think that you've got to be a more proactive defense in games like that. I think you've got to have a better pass rush against elite quarterbacks than what Georgia has had. I think you've got to knock, you know, you got to knock passes out of the air. You've got to get passes broken up. Give yourself a chance to turnovers. Those are things that a defense hopefully can do to negate some of the explosive plays that an offense is capable of making. And it just so happens that, you know, Georgia has not been as good at those things against the best defenses. I'll give you a quick example of this. You know, last year most people would have said the LSU defense was not very good, at least, you know, in comparison to national championship standards. But because of Derek Stingley, they were first in the country in passes broken up. That's the kind of thing that you can do to negate other explosive plays. When a team wants to throw the ball, you prevent them from doing it. Obviously, sacking the quarterback is another example of that. LSU also had more sacks than Georgia a year ago. You know, those are the things that if you want to measure the Georgia defense going forward, can you be impactful? Can you create negative plays against good teams? That's the new measuring stick, more so than how many points you allow over the course of the season, which I think can be a little bit of a misleading stat.
Brandon Adams from Dog Nation Daily, he's with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and College Football Game Time. Brandon, given the way things have gone on the offensive side of the ball this year for Georgia, can you see any offensive staff changes coming this offseason at Georgia?
Yeah, I would be surprised. I mean, obviously anything can happen, but you know, a lot of folks look at the, you know, kind of meager play of the wide receivers. But the truth is that Georgia's recruited that position the last couple of years far better than it has for really the 10 years prior. So I would say that Cortez Hankton still has a good bit of brand equity at Georgia, and I think that Georgia's probably pretty happy with him. He is kind of an instrumental figure in some of the best recruiting wins that position's had the last couple of years. So I wouldn't think that he'd be in very much trouble. I mean, you know, offensive coordinator Todd Monken, you know, Georgia fans and college football fans in general are pretty quick to criticize play calling, but I really haven't heard a ton of fan criticism of the game plan for Georgia. They haven't always executed it particularly well, but I really haven't heard that many people say they're in any way unhappy with what Munkin's doing. Munkin's the kind of guy that I think is upwardly mobile. He wants to be either a play caller in the NFL again or a head coach in college again. So, you know, I'm sure he's out there looking for jobs and a chance to advance his career on the basis of this year and the weirdness of coronavirus. Maybe that's not a possibility, but I don't think Georgia's looking to make any kind of, you know, change there or anything like that. I mean, the offensive results have not been great, but I don't know that anyone really zeroes in on the particular offensive coaches as the reason why that's happening.
B.A., yeah, the quarterback, we continuously come back to that position. And, you know, the opt-out of Jamie Newman, that was a bigger deal than most people are making of it, if you agree with me or not.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that we'll never really know how good Newman could have been at Georgia, but, you know, the notion that he left because he found out he wasn't going to be the starter, I don't think there's any evidence to support that. I think that maybe he was unhappy that he wasn't being treated like the starter. He certainly hadn't been named the starter. But when you bring a guy like that in and he chooses to opt out, and when that comes on the heels of Jake Fromm leaving after his junior season, when a lot of folks said, hey, I'm not really quite sure his draft status is solidified. And the year before that, Justin Fields transfers out of the program. When you have three quarterbacks like that choose to leave for whatever reason, there's going to be an on-field impact. And I think we're seeing some of that right now, Randy.
Brandon, Zamir White has almost half of his yards on the season in the last 2 weeks. What's been the difference these last couple of games versus the first four of the season?
Well, it sounds like Georgia kind of caught Florida sleeping on that one big game to start the game last week, where it sounds like Florida may have been looking for an inside run, and Georgia busted it with the three tight ends on the outside run. So that's part of that. I think the other thing is that Zamir, I believe, unfairly took a little bit of criticism early in the season for, you know, maybe being less than some people thought he would be. But, you know, Zamir probably wasn't fully 100% healthy during the Tennessee game. And since he's kind of gotten a little healthier, Georgia's gotten a lot more out of him. Now, there have been times when Georgia's been losing games, Florida and Alabama, and you haven't been able to call running plays for him and maybe as much as you want to. But Zamir is, I think, kind of coming into his own as at least a good SEC running back. Georgia fans are used to having a great back there, and I guess it remains to be seen if White's going to eventually be great or not. But he's at least a good running back, and so I think the last couple of weeks have just reminded us of what, you know, Zamir can be. And, you know, Georgia's got an ensemble of running backs. They want to get carries from multiple guys, but Zamir is still obviously a very big part of this Georgia offense.
Kirby kind of said that this week, Brandon, that they wanted to get him involved, keep him involved, wanted to find ways to get him the ball, talking about Zamir White. Is there a number that you think, whether that's coming from Kirby or it's coming from Todd Munkin, the number of touches they want to see Zamir White get consistently to week?
That's a good question. I don't know what the specific number would be, but your point, though, I think speaks to something that's going on with UGA right now, which is, this is an offense and transition. If you want to go back and look at, like, say, 2018, which is probably the best overall year for Georgia offensively of the Kirby Smart era, that was an offense that was predicated on establishing the run. And in the past game, which was probably better in 2018 than it's been in any other year under Smart, kind of built off the success of the running game. You know, college football just seems to have changed a lot over the last couple of years. And I'm not quite so sure how possible that even is anymore, where I think now, you know, teams in 2019, when Georgia had a massive regression offensively, I think a lot of that was due to the fact that teams stacked the box on Georgia and dared them to throw the ball, and Georgia was kind of incapable of doing that. So the 2020 season, the hiring of Todd Munkin and everything else, is kind of a response to what defenses did a year ago. And right now, Georgia's in the midst of making this transition. As opposed to using the run to set up the pass, I think Georgia's now trying to establish a little bit of a bona fide passing threat so that they have permission to run the ball after that. Now, that's a little bit of an oversimplification, but I think, broadly speaking, it's true, is that right now, when you see Georgia maybe not always running it as much as it wants to, or maybe sometimes even as well as it wants to, this is about Georgia transitioning into an offensive scheme that looks a little bit more like what the best teams in the country are doing, which is, frankly, a little less reliant on the run. So Georgia right now is kind of caught in the middle of this transition, and I think you're seeing some growing pains because of that.
BA, how good is this young man up there in is it Prince High School, Prince Avenue High School, the five-star Brock kid, whatever. How good is this young man?
Yeah, and it's a really good question, Randy, because, I mean, if you look at five-star quarterbacks in general, the batting average for their success is about 50%, right? Some of them go on to be good. Some of them we never really quite hear from. And you can kind of, you know, cite some examples of that over the course of the years. I will say that I saw Vandergrift play a good bit in the game against Rabun County a little earlier than this year, which was, you know, televised on ESPN. And even though the team that Prince was playing that day was far better, Rabun County, I thought Vandergrift had a pretty good day. He throws on the run pretty well, and he threw some balls in that game that probably, you know, could have been caught. But when you're playing with like a lesser caliber of wide receiver, maybe they're not going to quite do that. I mean, I certainly think he is a viable prospect. He was at one point in time committed to Oklahoma. Oklahoma really only shops for elite quarterbacks, so that's a little bit of a validation. I mean, the last thing I'm going to do is tell your audience that this is the next great quarterback in college football. It'd be unfair to put that level of hype on anyone, but he is certainly a legit prospect. He's a little beefier than some of these kind of beanpole high school quarterbacks can be from time to time. He's got good arm strength. He's a little more athletic than maybe some of the quarterbacks that Georgia's recruited in the last few years, so he's got the credentials to be an elite prospect, but that's only about half the battle. It's what you do once you get to Athens after that. So you know, nobody's a sure thing. No one's a given, Vandergrift included. But it's easy to understand why he's kind of considered the prospect that he is.
Hey, it's Brandon Adams from Dog Nation Daily. Brandon, appreciate the time. I want to encourage folks, check you out on Twitter. At Dog Nation Daily, and you can also make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, Dog Nation Daily, especially if you're a Georgia football fan. Brandon, appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, you guys have a great rest of the day and enjoy a little golf, a little college football, and we'll just appreciate the weirdness of 2020 here.
that's some good advice, Brandon. Yeah. Appreciate it, man. This is really, I mean, it's the strangest college football Saturday, guys, that I think I can. When you talk about, you know, 14, 15 games across the country being canceled, you know, four games in the SEC being, I shouldn't say canceled, postponed, but four games in the SEC being postponed, today is by far, I think, the strangest day of college football that, gosh, I don't know, you have to go back to like 9/11 to find the last time it was this awkward.
I know that was the last time. I know Georgia didn't play. We didn't play that weekend because of 9/11. We were supposed to play Arkansas, but we didn't play. That's the last time I can remember it. But yeah, this is a strange weekend.
We'll go across the nation next. 10th-ranked Indiana at Michigan State. We'll talk about that one. Wisconsin, Michigan today. We get some Big Ten and some Big 12 games, some Pac-12 games as well. Stay with us. College football game time. Sports Radio 92.9, the game of the radio.com app. Back in a minute.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.